seconds to comply.
I think you'd better do what he says, Mr. Kenny.
You have 60 seconds to comply. This is minute 27.
Part man?
Part machine.
All pod.
This minute begins with Don Johnson saying, "Do whatever you want," and ends with saying, "This is for you." And we are joined, for the last time, at least for now, by Rick Ingham of the Mad Max Podcasts and also the Waterworld podcast. My condolences for having to look at Waterworlds on the regular.
I mean, it's one hell of a movie, I'll tell you that much. There's
It's one shell of a movie, because it's the ocean and there are creatures with shells, and you see where I'm going.
You know what? I have a film theory that basically says if a movie can fulfill the premise of its title, then it's crossed my low bar. For example, if you see a poster that says RoboCop and you watch that movie and there is a RoboCop in it, then congratulations, your movie has fulfilled the title.
Like, yeah.
Waterworld. Does the movie take place on a world that is covered with water? It does. Congratulations, you've crossed that bar.
The thing that fascinates me about Waterworld, you know, because I grew up with the Pirates of the Caribbean movies that are beautifully filmed in a way that shows the ocean in this really epic way. It feels populated. There's landmarks for the eyes to focus on. Waterworld takes the other approach where, oh no, there is no land. There's no landmarks. There is just, it is blue as far as the eye can see. And after about the first hour, it's frankly maddening. I don't know if that was the intention, but it sure does work that way.
Yeah, the more I look at it, the more I'm thinking, yeah, that was 100% intentional.
I just realized the secret origin of Waterworld is there's an episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Well, shit. That's exactly what I was hoping to spare you from.
Where Julian Bashir gets trapped on a holodeck in a James Bond program.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end, he destroys like the polar ice caps and floods the entire world except for the top of Mount Everest.
You're a genius.
That's the secret origin of Waterworld.
So the secret origin is the sequel to Our Man Bashir. Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah.
I buy it.
Yeah, canon.
Now, I'm not going to take the time to go see, okay, when did that episode come out? Because if it came out after 1995, then that means that Bashir is secretly a Kevin Costner fan.
November 27th, 1995.
I was going to say, it could be about the same year, because DS9 was in season 4, so yeah. Could be a coincidence. I'm saying that the producers of Waterworld were secret Star Trek fans all along.
Right. Makes sense.
Anyway, RoboCop. Speaking of water.
That's right.
So we have all this text up on the side. He's got all these, I don't know, subroutines or whatever he's going through. They're just technobabble. Again, going back to technobabble.
No, these are real things.
Well, sort of. Because one's command.com. And
command.com is a real thing.
It is a real thing. And I looked it up. And it leads you to the 3M company, you know, that does all the tape and the adhesive.
Command, yeah, a lot of this is real things. I think the only real fake one is RoboUtils.
Yeah.
But the rest is referring to things that kind of exist. Okay, maybe...
Well, there's an EXE program, yeah.
Yeah, I've got in front of me. And yeah, RAMCheck is a thing. Config.sys is a real thing from PC. A ROM.io is a thing. A controller is just a controller. Comspec
parameters.
Memory.dat is a real thing. System. But so yeah, the only real command that's technically, you know, you wouldn't see in a computer would be okay. But I think that's just a command prompt.
I just watching this minute again, I feel like I should write some fan fiction about Dr. Tyler and RoboCop. Just saying.
Yeah. Maybe Dr. Tyler secretly became Dr. Tannenbaum.
It's all connected. That's a reference to the Christmas special of the animated series. For those who haven't actually listened to that episode, probably do listen to that episode, because it's just delightful. That cartoon is just so stupid.
It's so fun, and RoboCop has so many titty powers that it's ridiculous.
Mega titty power. That's the title of the episode.
Let me just write that down.
Yeah, mega titty powers. with double D, of course. You have to spell titty with two double Ds, because you see where I'm going with this.
titty, double D powers, yes. anyone else think that Morton's a little bit too thirsty for RoboCop in this minute?
Oh, I mean, this is his dream, his pet project. It's yeah. To me, it's almost, it's a man with his car more than anything. It's, you know, I've customized this thing and I've worked on it and it's just gonna, you're gonna be one bad motherfucker.
Yeah, I love that.
Shut your mouth.
But I'm talking about RoboCop.
Yeah, like, Bob Morton.
That we can dig it.
Has got these stars in his eyes that this RoboCop project is going to be the ultimate in urban pacification and is going to yeah. make the Ed 209 look ridiculous, which, spoiler alert, wow. that's exactly what happens over the course yeah. of this movie. But he has got such a boner for oh, yeah. putting Dick Jones down.
You got a boner yep. for Dick.
Yeah, yep. boner for Dick. Yeah, the thing is, though, and I love this in a lot of genre films, is that they have this technology that can fundamentally revolutionize every aspect of the world as they know it. And what do they do with it?
Make a robot cop. Yeah. Well, how many times do you shake someone by the hand and say, come here often?
Well, I mean, nowadays, with the pandemic, not that often. But in the before times...
Yeah, you just bump elbows and say, come here often.
Yeah, you see someone in a public setting and you want to go up and introduce yourself, say hello, you know, come here often, how you doing? You go to shake their hand and then they turn out to be a robot and they have the possibility of crushing every bone in your hand.
But the good thing is, with proper cleaning, it won't be a spreader event.
Speaking of this robot, I think this is the confirmation that Murphy is not in any kind of body right now. He's in some kind of Futurama type...
Brain in a jar.
Life support, brain in a jar kind of thing. Yeah, that's, to me, the most horrifying thing. It's the kind of locked-in syndrome. That's the scariest thing ever.
It's like that diving bell in the butterfly situation.
Which
where...
I've meant to read for a long time, and I haven't read it yet, because I can't bring myself to. It's just too awful.
I mean, it's not as terrifying as the Johnny Get Your Gun situation, where you're deaf, blind, and only able to communicate by tilting your head slightly, but it's not that far off.
Yeah, there was a more recent, so there was a Radiolab episode, not to go on a tangent, but there was a Radiolab episode of this girl who got into this horrific car accident, and she, for a time, so she permanently lost her sight, but initially was deaf as well. And
wow.
She imagined, she didn't really know if she was awake or asleep, she didn't know where she was, what had happened, and she imagined she was stuck in a brick wall. Like, she could kind of feel her face, but that was it. And she felt like she was just, yeah, staring out of a brick wall and had no body. But no one could communicate with her, and she was thrashing around. She would have, you know, these panic attacks, as you would. And eventually her boyfriend figured out that he could write a letter on her wrist and she could feel that. So one by, you know, he communicated letter by letter, and that's how they were able to get through to her during the initial phase of recovery. Ugh.
Yeah, that stuff just gives me the fucking...
Just, oh, kill me. Couldn't do it. Couldn't do it.
I'm trying to think of the words, but yeah, the jiblies,
the heebie-jeebies.
Strong bad reference. Jubilee, jubilee, jubilee.
Especially the realization that it could, in theory, happen to you at any time.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
You could step out your front door to get the mail, and, I don't know, a piece of engine could fall off a plane and crash through your body.
So I'm having flashbacks to a TV series, Dead Like Me. I think that's, like, one of the things that happens to one of the Reapers in there. You know, just, like, they're walking across the street one day, and then just... The comedic kind of piano hit them from a thing, like, randomly just happens. But I think, yeah, something, like, weird, like an engine or something like that.
I think if I can take any comfort from LiveLeak and also the YouTube channel Chubby Emu, which talks about these very strange medical conditions, most of the time these horrific accidents and diseases and stuff happen because someone was being a fucking idiot. So, yeah. Just don't be an idiot.
Shake hands with danger.
You know... Seeing someone bring out a robotic arm and then comment about, oh, it's so strong, it could crush every bone in your hand, it kind of gives me flashbacks. I recently binge-watched Archer on Hulu.
Yeah.
And there's that one character, Cheryl, who is obsessed with this one robotic arm that the resident scientist makes for her because it is very strong, has a very large grip strength, and she loves that robot.
Yeah,
the choking.
Yeah, and I have been told I look like her quite often, so I don't know how to feel about that.
I guess depends on how you feel about that character.
She's great, but it's kind of weird that it's just so horny.
I stopped watching Ida when they stopped doing the Miami Vice type stuff, and I just kind of lost interest.
Mm-hmm.
I've actually gotten back into it because I think in retrospect I was able to look back and go, oh, that's what they're doing. But
yeah, the coma seasons are actually pretty fun. I'll say that much.
I don't know how to describe to you how weird it is to watch a cartoon version of yourself doing all those weird kinky things. It's just...
How often do you go running around yelling outlaw country?
I don't know, my own brain was just thinking, the only way I could see myself doing that is if I animated myself doing that, because I don't think I'm going to ever see that. There's no characters look like me. I have to dress up like characters like Thor.
Maybe a bit of Krieger in the face. I could see it. Yeah.
There are some extremely impressive Krieger cosplayers in Perth alone, and I can't reach that level in Kriegerness. They even have the cutout of the holographic girlfriend wife.
Waifu, yeah.
It's so good. Speaking of weird robot fascinations. No, the funny thing is, to this day, whenever I look at this scene with the arm, my brain always goes, why are there six fingers? Because it's weird, because when you look at the hand, there's like the palm extends out slightly more than the rest of the four fingers, and there's just this little outcropping. It looks like a valve or something.
Yeah.
And it's just like, because this is supposed to be the hand that goes onto Robocop. Is this just a prototype and they slimmed it down when they finally got into the real thing? But even the hand seems bigger than, you know, yeah.
You know what they probably did? They probably built a hand that had two thumb actuators and they just said, okay, if we don't want the thumb on the one side of the hand, we'll take the actuator off in the final edit. Because this is just a prototype. They're still working through it. So whether it's going to be right arm or left arm, you know, we'll have the weird thumb nubbin there.
So this is one of the scenes they improvised as well.
Hence the come here often.
Yeah. There's a whole bunch of like overlapping dialogue in the original script, which is marketing people, the legal team, technicians, and it's just a cacophony of just weird shit in the script. In the novelization, it's roughly the same. You know, it's just a lot of things. So they don't really actually have this... this Morton scene. Although, the party scene was improvised, but Ed Neumeier actually liked it so much that he, because they were finding props around so they could do just different stuff to record, and they had this idea for a party, and he loved it so much, he quickly found an electronic typewriter to write the scene into the movie so they could get it properly approved. The party scene actually turns up in the novelization and the script we've got. We got the fourth revision script, but it doesn't have any of the improv stuff on
just
there.
Just looking closely at the hand, is that maybe like an aerial? Like it's being controlled remotely. I'm wondering if that was... Because it just sort of gives me an aerial vibe.
Yeah, every single time I saw it as a kid, I was like, why does Robocop have five fingers? Or five fingers and a thumb.
Would it be an advantage to have a second thumb, or is that just overcrowding it?
I don't know, that might be overkill.
Does Robocop need all the extra fingers? I mean, it's essentially basically a robot with a gun.
I mean, it's probably a compatibility issue. You want the brain in your robot to have some, you know, compatibility between it's used to and what it is in now. Like, if Murphy's brain woke up and he only had, like, three fingers, like, that would probably throw him off a little bit and mess with the compatibility issues of the brain and the robot.
Yeah, maybe.
Reminds me of that scene in the Ghost in the Shell movie where there's someone typing and they split their hands apart and there's more than tiny fingers.
That's so weird looking. It was weird in the cartoon, and it was even weirder when they made that awful live-action version.
That movie, the live action one, just watch it with, I don't know, whatever soundtrack you like. Just turn the sound off. Watch it. It's like a great music video.
It looks really good. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's not worth watching.
Nope.
I'm just trying to think of what would be a fun soundtrack to put to a movie like that, you know.
Hmm.
Do you want to go for, you know, orchestral and dreamscapey or death metal.
I would actually go synthwave, you know, get some Carpenter Brute up in there, yeah. We also get a little moment with Dr. Tyler, clearly does not like Bob Morton at all, and so when his hand's being crushed, it's like, oh, what a shame.
Yeah, she's probably thinking, just let it crush at least a little bit, just to put,
keep going.
Put the
keep
boss going. Through a little bit of pain.
Yeah. Come on, we all would.
You know, she gives me Jadzia Dax vibes. I think that's what it is.
I think it's the ponytail and the hair.
And the blue eyes. And the... I have a type. There's Dax and there's also every woman in Twin Peaks. Just the dark hair, the light eyes. Yep, that's my type, apparently.
Ah, so when we get to the next minute and she's let her hair down... Literally and figuratively speaking, you know, does that still apply?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. We'll get to that.
All right. So I have a question about this party.
Yes.
I always assumed that this was a New Year's Eve party.
Yeah, I think it is. It isn't is. It?
But is it all?
They say Happy New Year.
Like, okay, so it is a New Year's Eve party because I forgot for a moment. Like, could it be a birthday? But like, I distinctly remembered them saying Happy New Year, and it wasn't in this minute.
No, it's the next minute. They're going, you know, hello and all that. When they realize that Robocop's awake, that's when they were, oh, wow, he's awake, hello. And Tyler, in the next minute, kisses him and says Happy New Year, then falls on her ass. And that was improv.
Hmm.
I got it on the script right here. It does say Happy New Year. But again, this is one of those things where it's like two lines in a script. Where half but a minute in real life. Interesting you're talking about Tyler and all that. Ed actually talks about in the commentary that Norton was originally conceived by the writers to be more of a bad guy. The idea being that we, the audience, would actually enjoy his death when he finally gets killed, spoilers later on. Fortunately, the rest of the commentary doesn't discuss this because it's cut off. But it does make sense when you think about, like, Norton is still... the guy responsible for turning Alex Murphy into Robocop, in that he is the guy that put Murphy into the dangerous situation just so he could get a good cop in to basically die to be resurrected.
But it's Miguel Ferrer, so you kind of just love to hate him. He's great.
But that's the other thing. They found that the Miguel's charisma and likability, regardless of how much of a prick he's playing, actually kind of subverted that.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, it's also the way that Ronnie Cox delivers his Dick Jones performance, where he's just, as much as you hate what Morton is doing, Dick Jones is just that much worse.
Yes.
It's like Qui-Gon Jinn says in The Phantom Menace, there's always a bigger fish, and in this instance, there's always a larger asshole.
There's always a bigger cunt.
You can say that because you're Australian.
Yes, exactly.
I couldn't get away with that.
No, and we can't get away with it as a YouTube title, but whatever.
I don't know. I might edit that out, but it'd be fun to leave it in just to see how people might go, oh my god, I can't believe you said that.
That is the word of my people. This is my culture, sir.
I gotta say. Yeah. If I had said it, you'd have been like, no, you can't say that. That's our word.
Kill Bill alarm sounds going off.
No, but it's funny when you bring up Dick Jones, is because, you know, he doesn't really have, at least in this, say, first half, he doesn't really have that much of a role in everything that's going on, but he has such a lasting presence, and yeah, it's like everything kind of Morton does is because of Dick, you know, either looking up to Dick or trying to outdo him, or, you know, using the opportunity to just basically Dick fumbled the ball, I'm stepping up and taking over. And yeah, I don't think you would have gotten that if you hadn't got someone like Ronnie Cox, just like, yeah, just big dicking energy in the entire thing. And we've said that word so many times now, I think it's lost all meaning.
Yeah, that the scene that is coming later in this movie with Dick and Morton in the bathroom is such an amazing performance.
Yes. Courtney, I finally watched RoboCop.
Yeah.
And I'm remembering this scene in that RoboCop.
Yeah, shit, the what bathroom happened? Scene.
The bathroom scene where, you know,
yeah.
Dick is literally peeing into Morton's face.
That's right. I forgot. I need to watch it again.
Dying.
When I was formulating my plan for putting together my own version of RoboCop Minute, I was kind of thinking of doing a similar, like, you guys do Gaslighting of RoboCop where you look at the 2014 remake. I was going to do, hey, let's see what they're doing in the Our RoboCop remake, just because there are so many ridiculous things that these creators have done. But it's so hard to properly analyze comedy.
Yeah.
And Our RoboCop remake is pretty funny, and I didn't want to basically cheapen it by overanalyzing the jokes.
I can't wait for the dick shooting scene.
Okay, I'll be brutally honest. I have no issue analyzing comedy. That's kind of what I'm doing on my other podcast.
Yeah, you can do it. You figured out how to do it. I don't know how to do it.
Yeah, neither do I.
I would say my problem with Our RoboCop as a whole is that I think some of it's spec-fucking-tacular. I think it's just damn funny, really inventive, really smart. And there's other moments where it's just like, this has just lost me.
Well, I mean, that's the risk you take when you have a bunch of different creators all working together,
exactly.
Contributing their little bits.
And it's so subjective.
As a package, it was fascinating.
Mm.
Like, some of the scenes are like, hey, let's do a classical dance version of the shooting scene, and some of them are like, hey, let's throw the locker room scene into a North Korean recreation style, CGI cartoon maker.
Yeah, well, it just all of a sudden it's like, you know, backwater place, and you just think, I know what the scene is, and all of a sudden, like, the visuals and the mental thing just completely disrupt, and you're just like, oh my god, this is brilliant. I think the only things that came out really going, I wish they'd done a little bit better, was the media break stuff. That was often just there going, yeah, this is just not working.
You didn't like the spaghetti shtick?
That wore on me. That was one of those things where it's just like, it was funny initially, and then as it dragged on, I was just like, I'm kind of over it.
You're like, you can only take so much of people shoveling pasta into their faces.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that was just like,
I think the cracked stuff is good.
I bet the New Jersey market ate that up, though.
Yeah, probably. My favorite camera over the entire thing. Fuck it, we're talking about Our RoboCop for the rest of the hour. In the boardroom scene, the first one with their 209, one of the background actors is Peter from The Room.
Huh?
Kyle Voigt. He doesn't have any dialogue. He's barely noticeable, but if you spot him, you go, holy shit. And he even looks like he's wearing the exact same suit that he does in when he's in The Room. And for those who don't know, Peter is the psychiatrist who gets replaced towards the end birthday party scene with a completely different actor.
Hey, he gets recast halfway through. I've seen that movie many times. Yeah. So, do we have any more minutes notes for this minute? I can speak.
John Davison. I haven't talked about John Davison in a while, so I forgot his last name. In the commentary, John Davison actually says that the RoboVision was actually shot originally in 35mm like the rest of the movie, and then they post-processed it by adding all the gridline elements in, you know, varying different lengths on top of it. So there is footage of this, you know, clear as day. But just adding that little extra detail, you know, that little distortion, it just adds so much to the feel like this isn't our normal reality anymore. And I just, god damn it, I love it.
It's another good example of us being in there with Murphy, experiencing it all at the same time. I know I've said it every single episode I've been on so far, but it doesn't make it any less true.
Yeah.
Doesn't hurt to reiterate what is true. All right. Gaslighting RoboCop.
Alex, how do you feel?
I feel fine, Dr. Norton.
And this minute, it begins with Clara saying, you're saying you can save him. And then it ends with the end credit theme from Neon Genesis Evangelion. Yep. Gotta say that from the top, because that's gonna be a bitch to edit.
Well, it is the original Frank Sinatra recording, yes. Which actually would have cost him a lot of money. Frank Sinatra music is not cheap.
When I hear this song, I actually think more of the Bayonetta video game, because they hammer this song into you so much during that game. So I hear Fly Me to the Moon, and all I can think of is crazy skin-tight catsuit witch with guns on her feet.
Yeah, it's the anime theme now, yep. I guess.
You had me at skin-tight catsuit.
Yeah, but it's made out of her hair, and that's just plain weird.
I'm not playing that much Bayonetta. I really do need to, because it looks like a fun game.
I mean, it's really well done.
Honestly, a lot of games coming out of Japan are a lot of fun. You know, you've got your Metal Gears, you got your Bayonettas, you got your bloody Final Fantasy. I've never played Final Fantasy before, but then I played, I don't even know which one it is, 50 bajillion, and I'm on a boys weekend because it's like our Bucks night thing, because one of us is getting married. It's great. I'm having a wonderful time.
Nah, Cloud's cat skin tight catsuit is the best.
But yeah, this minute I think solidifies more than any other that it is too late for this film to recover and make us give a shit about these characters, because we should have had some kind of emotional investment in those first few minutes. And then when this happens and we're seeing, you know, him dancing with Clara, we should go, oh, this is kind of cute and we're feeling something. But no, it's just like, these are actors. I am very aware that this is just a bunch of actors standing around saying some lines that someone else wrote for them.
It's such a badly handled left turn moment as well, because you're like, yeah, we know we're going to see the RoboCop. Oh, but he's well again. Ha, ha, ha. And it's like, oh, okay, maybe this is a dream sequence like in the original one. This is a flashback. This is anything. This could be good. And then all of a sudden it's like the next minute is, oh, no, it's just he's literally now RoboCop in full length. He's being built. We don't see any of the process. And, oh, God. My note for this particular section is...
Many months later.
Because it says 3 months later, so it makes you think, oh, well, they rebuilt him, right? And he just looks like a normal man. Fooled you.
Okay, no. So in isolation, watching these 3 minutes, and the way that this minute specifically ends, you would believe that if you only watch these minutes, that the RoboCop movie... does not actually feature a robot cop. Like, you get to see Clara in this really emotional scene, like, tell me you can save him, what kind of life is he gonna have? And then they fast forward 3 months later, and hey, you know what, he's fine, they're having a barbecue in the backseat. Like, damn, this robot technology is great. He doesn't even look like a RoboCop. Maybe that's gonna be some weird armor he's got, and he's hanging out with the chief. And Lewis is there, and they're just drinking beers and throwing them out. I'm like, damn, this looks pretty great.
Yeah.
I'm going to do an edit now where it's just literally Murphy coming up to the car, blowing up this the last minute scene with the OCP going, we can rebuild him. And right at the last end of this minute is literally the end of this actual scene. The next minute actually cuts cleanly into the laboratory with RoboCop. But instead of it cutting to the laboratory of RoboCop and cutting to credits.
Yeah, you can end the movie after minute 27 and just have it be a short. You don't need however long afterward this movie goes. Like, let's see, how long is it? It is 1 hour 57 minutes. You can cut out over an hour of this movie because it is not necessary. You just need to believe, you know what? After the 27-minute mark, they restored him completely. He gets to have a cool barbecue, hang out with his friends, and that's it. You could be satisfied with that. I want that edit of the movie.
I am literally opening up Premiere Pro right now, and I'm doing it as we speak.
All right. I do want to call out the actress who plays Chief Karen Dean, who you see in this scene. She is played by Marianne Jean-Baptiste. She recently appeared in a little movie called Fat Man, where she plays a character named Ruth, and she is Mel Gibson's wife, because Mel Gibson is essentially playing Santa Claus, and so she plays Mrs. Claus, and that movie is spectacular.
I wondered about that. I don't know why it just came up in my searches across IMDb. I just went, that looks insane.
So Julia, my co-host from the Mad Max Minute, and I, we watch movies from our hiatus list as part of a monthly thing on our Patreon feed, patreon.com/madmaxmin. And we watched Fat Man the first weekend in January because Christmas had just passed. And let me summarize it by saying that Mel Gibson is Santa Claus and a spoiled rich kid hires Walton Goggins, who is an assassin, to travel to the North Pole and assassinate Santa Claus. And so Santa gets in a shootout with this assassin at the North Pole, and it is insane.
I've added it to my Letterboxd list. It's on my Letterboxd list now. We're doing it. We're doing it.
To quote Emil, I like it!
Yes.
Yeah, that's one of those movies and they're going, Mel Gibson. But at the same time, that looks too fun not to look at.
Like, go into it with extremely low expectations. Like, don't let my gushing about it make you think that it is the next Citizen Kane, because it is so not. But
yeah, it sounds like it might
Jean
be like
Baptiste
Psycho
is one of the
Goldman.
High points of that film.
Yeah, I recently watched Psycho Goreman, and that's kind of the same thing, where it's this very campy, insane movie. It's not a masterpiece, but damn, it's fun.
I am a lover of trash media. I think there's always some value to have attracted from trash media and bad movies.
I think there's even value reviewing this RoboCop against the original, in especially in this minute. I've been thinking so much about how every little choice in the original RoboCop is to further the plot. So just the camera angles, the editing, the flashbacks. It's not just to show that he had a family, oh, that's sad. No, we're seeing his particular relationship with his family, or how he feels about that, and you know, just all of that. And this particular flashback, okay, it shows that Murphy has a relationship with his wife that seems pretty okay, I guess. And that's it. That's all it is.
Okay, so I've made my ultimate robo cut of the 2014 movie. It is 10 minutes and 16 minutes long. And let me just get the
credits are longer than the film.
The credits are 7 minutes and 15 seconds.
Nice.
It goes Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Pictures, Columbia Pictures presents RoboCop, then cuts to Joel Kinnaman going up. Blows up, boardroom scene, flashback, and then credits.
Masterpiece.
When I first watched this minute 27 for the remake, I thought the little white letters said 3 months earlier. I thought it was a flashback, but no, it's a flash forward to 3 months from now, which is why it works so good as, oh yes, they completely fixed him, everything fine, there's no shoe to drop.
Yeah. Exactly.
You could be mistaken for that, to be honest.
I legit thought, oh, this was 3 months earlier. Okay, so is this barbecue scene going to set up why he was exploded? No. I read it wrong. I was mistaken.
Or maybe, you know, in a later scene, he pulls off the silicon skin and then underneath is just all the mechanical stuff.
But how weird would it been if, like, RoboCop goes to Clara and he's like, hey, let's dance in the backyard, and he does the spin that he does in this minute, and that's how she knows that he's actually in there somewhere.
I still want the scene from RoboCop 2 where, you know, where Ellen goes and meets RoboCop after he's been harassed, and he just goes, they build this to honor him. That would have been the better scene in this remake.
Yeah.
I know I've brought that twice up, but yeah,
thought you were going to say that you wanted to see that one part of RoboCop 2 where the RoboCop prototype pulls his own head off. Because
yeah.
That would have been a real baller move on their part. Like, Joel Kinnaman, God, they put him in the RoboCop thing, and then he starts screaming and rips his own head off.
Maybe that's why he's got the retractable helmet, so that, you know, every single previous version is just like, get this shit off me! Oh, Jesus. That removable helmet kind of undercuts a lot of the
Yeah, because the visor being permanently drilled onto his head, that changes things quite a bit.
Yeah, it's almost like it's symbolism.
Like, RoboCop needs to earn the ability to take off his helmet. It cannot just be given to him from the onset. That's not how this works.
Oh, yeah, and then the whole thing of, like, he has emotions, but then he doesn't have emotions, then he has emotions again.
I need Harrison Ford to show up and be like, that's not how RoboCop works.
Oh, God. Harrison Ford as RoboCop?
Oh, my God.
Harrison Ford as RoboCop would not work because Harrison Ford already doesn't want to be there. So putting him in a RoboCop suit, he'd be like, screw this, I'm leaving.
Oh, yeah, he'd just like, get this shit off of me.
Grumpiest RoboCop ever.
So good.
Pretty sure he showed up in those last few Star Wars movies just wearing whatever he was wearing on the day. It's fucking fine, I'll just wear this. No, it's fine. He definitely did that in Blade Runner 2049. I can't wait to get to that. I think he was wearing a gray t-shirt. And he was like, fuck you, I'm going to wear the gray t-shirt.
That's not a set, that's his house. And so when he's like, what the hell are you doing here? He's asking that legitimately. Like, what are all these cameras and lights doing in my house?
I got to have you on for those minutes for minute 2049.
Oh man. 2049 has me, like, seeing what Denis Villeneuve did for Blade Runner 2049 has me really excited for Dune. And I don't think anybody has any right to be truly excited for Dune because of what happened back in the 80s. But I just so excited for it.
Oh, I'll follow that man into hell. So, yeah.
I do need to go and start watching more of his stuff because I just need to get around to doing that kind of stuff.
I like that weird one with the big spider and it's Jake Gyllenhaal versus Jake Gyllenhaal. It's great.
Which one's that one?
I don't know what it's called. My brother and I just flicked over to it one night. We couldn't stop watching.
Because I'm arachnophobic, but then you went, it's Jake Gyllenhaal versus Jake Gyllenhaal. And they're going, that sounds like it'd be fun.
Oh, it was great. It was weird. Lovely.
He's a bloody good actor, he is.
All right, I guess we've talked about all the RoboCop that we can talk about for now. So
yeah, and I kind of zoned out a little bit there, but that's because I was making the ultimate edit of RoboCop 2014.
Yes. Oh, by the way, it's called Enemy, the movie from 2013. So yeah,
I have to look that one up. And thanks again for and it was a. Thank you for being a part of the podcast that never was for you.
Yes. Like I said before, thank you so much for bringing me on because, you know, sometimes the seed of an idea drops into the soil of life and it gets trodden underfoot and somehow it erupts through the pavement of adversity to grow into the light of day, and it delights me to no end that I'm able to refresh my podcatcher every so often and see 60 Seconds to Comply pop up in my feed. I am so thankful for it. Not just that you brought me on, but that it exists in the first place, and it delights me to no end.
You are most welcome. what was the name of your RoboCop podcast? Did it have a name?
I think it was just RoboCop Minute.
You know what, frankly, I feel like we've saved you from a mediocre title.
Yeah, so. it's not great.
It's descriptive.
Yeah.
I think it was one of those things, we probably could all agree on this. The fact that nobody had done RoboCop, you just want to go, one of those movies you think,
what?
No, this should exist.
Yes. Yeah, that's why we were sitting around, we were reviewing Prometheus, and we're like, what would we do together if we did a Movies by Minute? And RoboCop, definitely. We talk about RoboCop a lot. And then we went, someone's definitely done RoboCop. Are you kidding me? We looked it up. Yeah. It did not exist.
For me, it was also the moment when I just went, I've got the perfect title, 60 Seconds to Comply. Yeah, it's just...
I think we kind of decided we had to do it because we had the title more than anything.
Yes.
You know, sometimes there's just a good title and you've got to seize on it. One of the standout Movie by Minute podcasts, The Fifth Element, came about specifically because of the title that they were able to use.
Well, I think that's basically how RoboCop came into existence, where they went, it's a robot cop, his name's RoboCop, and then just like, it slaps,
like,
let's do it.
What if cop, but also robot? Well, what would we even call that?
It's a stupid title, and yet the subject matter is so full of depth and seriousness and humor and just bloody gore, and it's a wonderful mismatch.
I feel like that's what our podcast is as well, especially in these last 3 minutes. I've been talking about like all this profound stuff about, you know, how we relate to the mechanical and the biological and all of that shit. Also, plenty of just immature humor.
Yeah,
all the way down,
like and choking robots and stuff like that.
Yeah,
I mean, mega titties.
We could have gone into how, you know, when they notice that RoboCop is observing their party, that they could have done something even more rude. But technically, that is more minute 28. So I look forward to seeing, or I look forward to hearing all of the different things that Tyler could have done other than just kissing RoboCop.
Gonna put that in my fan fiction.
Considering how we end this podcast... Well, he's probably still in pieces at this point, so it probably wouldn't be below. Pans down, there's just nothing below.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, Murphy.
So, where can we find you, Rick?
All right, if people are not tired of listening to me, then they can go to madmaxminute.com, which I would argue is a better time because you don't only have to listen to me, you also get to hear my co-host Julia, who is there with me, and we talk about the Mad Max movies 1 minute at a time, and there is so much good stuff in there because even for the more mediocre moments, or even for the more mediocre moments of Mad Max movies, we're able to wring out so much good stuff because they're are so many nuggets of gold in those movies, and we love talking about them, and we've been told that we have great chemistry. Like Julie and I, we are one of those married couple podcast hosts, so we better have good chemistry. But we love talking about the Mad Max movies. We have all four of them analyzed 1 minute at a time. We're currently going through Waterworld, which is its whole other thing, let me tell you. But we have a good time, and we would love everybody to join us at madmaxminute.com.
Yeah, genuinely, the Mad Max podcasts are great, and
it's definitely
so well-researched, and I think what makes it different is because Mad Max, culturally, you know, you have this history of exploitation films, and it's a whole foreign thing to most listeners, so being able to bring that aspect of where this movie came from in that cultural context, it's very well done.
Yeah. And if you listen far enough through the Fury Road season, you actually get to listen to me have about an hour-long conversation with Academy Award-winning director George Miller at the
tail
end.
What?
So,
what?
Yeah.
No.
So about midway through the Fury Road season, I saw an article from IndieWire where George Miller was talking about how when he hears fan productions like the Mad Max Minute, it gives him a lot of satisfaction knowing that the details that he's put into these movies are coming across to the audiences. And so I sent a few emails to his assistant, and she was like, okay, sure, I'll set up an interview. So that's pretty fun.
I need to get bloody Ridley Scott on my podcast. Where are you, Ridley?
Ridley Scott, Verhoeven!
Yeah, also that. I mean, I've been doing Prometheus and Alien Covenant for 3 years, so I feel like, you know, Ridley owes me his time, if anything.
I demand my vengeance.
Yes.
Speaking of Prometheus and Covenant by minute.
Yeah, so if you want to hear me analyze those films in excruciating detail, you can head on over to TriviumDesigns.com or just wherever, you know, good or just okay podcasts are found.
Just find a minute-by-minute podcast and Courtney will be on there.
Probably. Throw a stone. I've been on them at least once. And, my YouTube channel, Courtney Coulson, talk about being a female-to-male-to-female detransitioner. And, that's everything.
And yeah, I guess you can follow me on Fandom Crossing. I do Kunk Power into the minute, and maybe I could actually get Steve Odekirk onto that one. You know?
I think he's an easy get. Yeah, he'd be an easy get.
He does have a Twitter account, and I just feel a bit too like, hi, I've got like 5 followers. More importantly, you know, check us out on YouTube, Simplecast, Spotify, Apple, Google's, all those different type of things. Like, share, subscribe, rate and review, all that other lovely algorithmic stuff. And until next time,
it's Robocock.
Nerf.
Thank you.